Ready, everybody? The show on the road. Thank you. Okay, I'm going to go ahead and call this meeting to order at 6:32 p.m. Is there anyone in the audience who would like to address the board regarding any closed session items? Seeing none, we will adjourn to closed session. Okay, we're going to go ahead and call this meeting, this open session, open at 7 p.m. We can all rise for the invocation. Mr. Spence will lead us in the invocation, and I will lead the flag salute.
Our kind and gracious Heavenly Father, we gather as the West Community Unified School District Board of Trustees and as members of the community and staff, and we're grateful for the opportunity we have to serve in these capacities. We're grateful for the start of school and grateful for the opportunities that that gives the children of this district. We ask for a blessing upon them, upon their parents, and upon their teachers and the staffs, that it will be a productive year that helps them learn the things that they need to learn to be good citizens. And this we pray in the name of Jesus Christ. Amen.
Amen. Join me in the flag salute, please. Right hand over the heart. Ready? Begin.
I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Roll call, please.
Mrs. Miranda Jimenez?
Here.
Mrs. Polis?
Here.
Mr. Spence?
Here.
Mr. Cox?
Here.
Mrs. Shoemaker?
Here.
Mrs. Kaplan?
Here.
Okay, for report of action taken in closed session in the matter concerning student 184776, with the recommendation to lift the expulsion and readmit the student to the district with enrollment at West Covina High School. It was moved by Ms. Polos, it was seconded by Mr. Spence, and it was 5 votes in favor. Okay. Alrighty. Can you pass that down, please? Thank you kindly. Okay, Board President's report. There's two things to talk about, three actually. And the first is a good thing, and now that I have Mr. Freeland in, I have Mr. Larkin in the audience and Dr. Coughlin. I had heard from Mr. Freeland over at the city what an amazing job you did, Dr. Coughlin and you, and then also there was a janitor over at Edgewood, the custodian. Yes, this year in the planning for the 4th of July celebration, he said it was the best, most organized, well-prepared they had ever coordinated with us. Mr. Freeland said he was so incredibly grateful, and I wanted to pass that on, and that I'm so glad that you're here in the audience so that you can hear that. Thank you. Thank you very much, and to Dr. Coughlin as well. They said we were very organized, and it went without a hitch this year. Where in the past there's been some like little minor glitches, like sprinklers going on. So it was excellent. So thank you so much on behalf of all the board. Thank you for your hard work, Dr. Coughlin as well. Okay, we welcome the teachers back, the staff, the entire district back, and that went very, very well. I'd have to say my most favorite inspirational speech was Mr. Michaels, and my favorite informative speech was Ms. Kaplan, and that went off very well. I'd like Ms. Kaplan to share with us if she can, the reactions from the staff, because she also then went and sat in many of the trainings. She visited most of the schools, as well as to tell us about the first day of school and how well that went for the district. So, Ms. Kaplan, could you add to my report?
Sure. We've got a tremendous amount of positive feedback about the back-to-school event. Went to a lot of the trainings. We all went to many of the trainings, and the principals and teachers felt that it was a really good beginning because we talked about the new learning and to be able to kind of be novices again and learn new ways of educating our kids, and they felt very motivated and inspired and went back right into the right from the beginning training with other teachers, and it seemed to be a very good beginning. I went to one site and talked to two of the trainers from right to the beginning, and these are two trainers who've been to 10 days of training for right to the beginning. Their job is to train the staff, and they said that the fact that we gave them permission to be novices, to be learners, that they felt that as trainers of trainers, they had to know all the answers and know everything, and they just felt like so relieved that they could go into this new learning open-minded and knowing that's going to be hard work and that they're not going to be experts from the very beginning. So it was just a wonderful beginning, and everybody seemed to really appreciate everyone's efforts to welcome them back. We had a few before school things I just want to talk about. Kaiser Permanente partnered with three of our schools and provided to Merlinda, Monta Vista, and California, 200 backpacks, their staffs, it's not that Kaiser paid for it, each of their staff members went out and picked a backpack, and they kind of had their own competition inside to get us the 600 backpacks. I actually went to Merlinda. These two boys right over here were waiting in line from 6 o'clock in the morning to get their backpacks at 9 o'clock. Many of the Kaiser staff, some doctors were there too. Each student would come in. They would take a student one at a time to pick out their backpacks, and it was really an amazing, wonderful collaboration and great way for our kids to start school. And then when I went to the schools on Monday, you could see them all with their new backpacks and so proud to have them. So that was wonderful. And that I also attended the transition school open house on Friday, and that was really the building again. Dave looked wonderful, major work done, and you could see the students and the parents just seemed so pleased with the facilities and excited about the new beginning. We had 2 days of school, very positive beginning. I've been to all of the schools, talked with all of the principals. Everybody thought things went very smoothly. We were a little worried about the week before school, starting a week earlier, we might not have as many kids, but we're very equal to what we had last year. Had a few, our moderate to severe kids, we had several programs, new programs, and they started off really well. A few bus problems that we worked out, but for the most part, the kids were welcome to each campus and have really worked out very well. And we have a new points of sale system, which we've had little glitches in that, but our nutritional services department is working really hard to get that taken care of. Our schools look terrific. A lot of great work done this summer. I don't like to compare school districts, but I was driving in another unnamed school district, and our schools look so much better. The grass looks so green and cut, and it just really was nice to start school with having our building so well and maintained. A lot of new fences in our schools. That was one of the things we were going to do with bond money to make our schools safer. And so as you go around to campuses, they really look good. They look like they've always been there, very nicely done. So it's been a very good beginning. We're very excited about this school year, and it's fun to see the kids, having the kids and teachers back. It's very lonely and quiet here in the summer. It's nice to have everybody back.
Thank you so much for working so hard, Mr. Larkin. Thank you, thank you, thank you. Because I know you had a very short window. We started a week earlier this year, and plus you had all the modifications that needed to be done, so thank you. We really appreciate your hard work. The last thing on the President's report is we had spoke in the spring about the back-to-school nights and having more of them on one day in a much shorter window so that parents could get the information sooner and that we wouldn't have them one per day. So just we talked about having coverage as best as we could so that the schools felt supported. So you're not locked into this, but if you can just give us an indication of who's going to come so that they can know how many parking to set aside for us, and they're aware that we're gonna be coming. The schools are very kind, and they set aside one or two spots for the board. So I'm just going to go ahead and pass this around. You're not bound to it. Again, if you want to go to all of them and rush all over the district, that even better. So just so that we can get a clear idea of who's going to be attending. So I'll start on this side. Thank you so much.
Can you email that to us? Can you email that to us?
Can you email that to us?
Yeah.
Yes, we can get that
sure.
Email too. Well, she.
Are you talking about the sign up?
Yeah. To.
You want to email to sign up?
Yeah, because
right?
I'm going to have to go through the calendar and all that stuff. I mean, I can do it here, but.
Okay,
I'm
but then you can let.
She talks. So.
Okay. Yeah. Good. Okay, thank you. So this will be really good. So if everybody just, you know,
so
best you can.
Tonight.
I know.
No, kinder. Tonight is kinder.
It's kinder, though.
Yes. Mine is Thursday. Okay. Any other comments from my colleagues here on the board? Mr. Cox, Ms. Poulos, Mr. Spence?
Just that opening day went well, and Mr. Michael's speech was excellent. I hope he gets to give it again. And for the record, I had very bad scores in citizenship in school as well, as he outlined. So I could relate to
Sorry
the kid.
To hear
that. I could relate to the kid he was talking about, about that.
Mm-hmm. Ms. Shoemaker? No. Okay. I have one item from the floor before me. I have Ms. Phyllis McDonald from the Rotary Club of West Covina. If you can go ahead and come to the podium. Thank you.
First of all, I'd like to say say thank you to all of you for allowing me to come tonight. This is kind of like old home week. I was back here when we did the mini grants. And as you know, the Rotary Club of West Covina, the Lunch Bunch, support the West Covina Unified School District in many ways throughout the year. We are there for all the mini grants. We are there to help out wherever we are needed. And one of the things that we determined, 3 years ago we started a 5K run. The idea behind it being to help fight childhood obesity, because statistically the children are getting heavier and heavier, and part of it is because mom and dad both work and nobody is there to make them go outside, and plus they feel unsafe being out there anyway in some areas. So anyway, we decided to do this. We named our 5K run the Heart of the Valley. And one of the things that we decided to do with our money last year was, thanks to Mrs. Kaplan, we said, okay, let's think about the schools in our district. What school could use some extra equipment to help the kids along with their exercises and things? And so everybody got their heads together, and the idea came up to do it for Holland Crest School. For Holland Crest Middle School. And so I, on behalf of the West Covina, Rotary Club of West Covina, I have a check here. And
I'll come down to the
podium. Okay, good. I can open it. I'll let you open it.
Ooh, let's get the sound of ripping on the microphone.
There you go. Rip that.
Let's get the sound of ripping on the microphone. That's always good. Okay. Oh, thank you so much.
Okay.
Wow.
This is for Holland Crest Middle School school equipment, and it's a check for $4,441.
Wow.
And we have just finished, almost finished, all of the paperwork on our 5K run that we did this spring. And so there is a possibility that we will revisit that, and there may be more money available for us. And, you know, you're very lucky because you have two members, one on the board and one that is your superintendent, who are very active in the Rotary Club of West Covina. And that may have something to do with why we do support you. That, and I worked in West Covina since 1966, mm-hmm. and so I have a, Oh, and so I really have a soft spot in my heart for the school district,
right.
And for the school. So thank you so much for allowing us to do that.
Thanks to the information you gave us from the tour that we took of all the cafeterias.
Oh, that's right.
Ms. Kaplan shared with all of us, because none of us had paid attention to the M in the front.
Oh.
So thank you very much.
You're very welcome.
This. So now we all know every time I go, I think of you.
Yeah, thank you.
You had got that place there for us.
That's right.
Well, thank you so much for this generosity.
You're
really,
welcome.
Really
You're welcome.
Oh, my gosh, this is tremendous.
Thank you.
And thank you to our two Rotary people as well, Mr. Cox and Mr. Kaplan. Ms. Kaplan, thank you so much.
Thank you.
Anyone who would like to pull any item off of the agenda or move something to consent? I'd like to remove 9 very quickly. Anybody want to move anything to? No. Okay, I would also.
Yes, go ahead, Ms. Shimmy. Number 11 to add.
Okay. Any objections? Okay, so let's add 11. And then I would like to propose that we move item 16. Up before 5. So that way the presentation can be made and everyone can.
I personally don't think it's necessary.
It'll be 5 minutes.
I don't think it's going to make any difference.
Okay, well, just so that they can do their report and go.
There's only 5 and 9. And you said yours was only going to take a minute.
9 and 11. Oh, I'm sorry, 11, we added to consent.
Yeah, I'm fine leaving it the way it is.
Okay, so I'm hearing the consensus saying to leave it the way it is.
Yeah. I think we're going to move right along.
Yes, it's quite entertaining.
I'm sure they want to hear everything.
I'm sure. They would be severely disappointed for
okay.
missing this opportunity.
All right. Then we are going to take item number 9 off consent, remove place 11 on consent. Okay. Who will approve the agenda?
I'll approve it as amended.
Second.
Okay, it has been moved by Ms. Poulos and seconded by Mr. Cox to approve the agenda with the following changes. Item number 9 is taken off of consent. 11 is on consent. All those in favor for the regular board meeting of August 13th? All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. All those opposed? Okay, it's carried.
I didn't want to delay the meeting, but I should probably abstain because of 2 and 3, so I'll just go ahead and abstain on the whole calendar, consent calendar. That's fine.
Okay, so Mr.
It's I wasn't here for. And
Mr. Spence is going to abstain for
the consent.
Item 2.
There were no emergency items in there, I don't think. So.
Okay. Okay, so on item number 2, it's 4-1.
Well, I'll just abstain
3.
On the whole calendar.
Okay.
It makes it easier at this point.
All right, abstain on the whole calendar. Okay, thank you. Okay, let's move on to item number 5. Okay. Designation. Everybody got a copy of the letter, correct?
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
What letter? Oh, yeah, probably.
Is there a way that we could, on this item, unless people have someone in mind, that we just send out a notice to the schools and ask if there's people that are interested, that they could submit themselves, and we can do this at a later date?
That would be a good idea. I like that idea. A very good idea. Okay. All right, then we'll go ahead and table item number 5.
Should we go through the school site councils?
Just some kind of notification at the school sites, however
okay.
the information gets
okay.
out.
Okay.
And
then
also Twitter.
Okay.
Oh, Twitter it. Oh, I like
oh, yeah.
that. We're so
yeah,
modern.
Tweeted.
I think
it
would
be tweeted.
Yes.
Okay.
Tweeted. Thank you. Put it on our Twitter and we will tweet it.
Or whatever, just something to see who's
good
on.
Good idea.
Okay. Item number 9, I'm voting for item number 9. I just want the public to know that I simply was asking for the actual amounts on the miscellaneous stipends. So that's all. I just wanted to put that on record. Okay, so I will go ahead and move the personnel report.
Second.
Okay, so it has been moved by Ms. Miranda Jimenez and seconded by Mr. Spence. To approve and ratify the personnel recommendations as presented, all those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. All those opposed? Okay, thank you kindly. All right. As promised, as my colleagues promised, we did get to number 16 quickly.
And I'm so glad they didn't miss that.
Okay, so I will turn this over, the information report on Cortez. I will turn it over to Ms. Kaplan.
Many of you are aware. The SELPA is made a decision 2 years ago to take back our programs from LA County, and for different districts within each LEA to take on program provider programs. And the one program that we've been looking at for our district is the Cortez ED program, because that is housed in our district and has been for a while. And tonight we really want to share with you all the information we learned about the facility Cortez and what things may need to happen in order for us to take back this program.
Okay.
So basically we're going to tell a little story about how we got here and then make a recommendation. We're not asking you to vote on this tonight because we're giving you a lot of information, and we also need to hear from you. Many of you have a lot of past history on the facilities here and can also give us some insight into things that maybe we didn't think about.
Is this different than the
handout? Is this different? It's updated than the one you had in your packet.
This
one at the table. That's the same.
There's one minor change. I'll let you know where that change is as we get to the end. Before we get started, I want to introduce some guests with us tonight. We have Al Zimba, who is the architect who did the facility needs assessment. Al Zimba, architect, and Betty Hansen, a school consultant. who we've used in the past and is an expert in getting state money for modernization projects, if there is ever any state money. And so they're not going to be presenting tonight, but they are available if you have any questions as we go along. For those of you who don't know, Cortez school site over on the east part of town, 9.7 acres, 20 classrooms, 4 restrooms, a multi-purpose room, and an administration office. This is the history of the school site as I've written it. I had to go back and look through some documents. So based on the documents that I found, I believe this to be the case, but if you know differently, please let me know. It looks like it was built in 55 by Covina Valley School District. In 1960, it was annexed from them, from Covina Valley to West Covina, and in 1988, it was closed. 1989, it was leased to a non-public school where it looks like that non-public school was there until 1996, where the county took it over, and that's been running the county programs out of there since 96. Is that pretty close to the history as we know it?
I think 60 was the unification and stuff in Covina Valley and West Covina Valley.
Right. I think at the time it was Covina School District, and then it... Currently, we're using the site, and we're leasing it to the county. We receive a credit of $250,656, and this is based on they're using 10 classrooms, the office, the multi-purpose room. We receive a credit on what we owe for the program, but with that $250,000, we're still responsible for 1.5 custodian salaries over there, the utilities, and the regular maintenance and insurance costs. So we're not where we receive a credit of $250,000, we're paying out about $230,000. So the program is basically cost neutral right now. I'm going to have Kim Alexander, Director of Special Education, come up and talk about the proposed take-back timeline.
Good evening. We've been talking about over the last year and a half about the proposed takebacks from the SELPA. In the spring of 2012, the SELPA gave notice to LACO that we were going to take programs back, and so we've been working on that ever since. In the 12-13 school year, program work groups were created, and we have members that sit on each of those work groups from our district, as do all the other districts. In this year, we continue to have those meetings and discuss all of the different issues regarding the take back. I myself sit on the operations and facilities group, and so I've learned a lot about the facilities, not only within West Covina, but within the other districts as well. Originally, we had planned to take back the Cortez program in the 13-14 school year. But due to sort of all of these issues that were coming up regarding facilities, that was postponed until 14-15. This year is one of the things that we've looked at toward taking back Cortez and anticipating those needs. We have agreed, at least at this point, to participate on the Cortez WASC accreditation visit. If we're going to be running the program next year, it would be helpful for us to help design those things that are being presented to the accreditation committee. LACO has asked for a one-year additional extension. We don't know if they're going to get that yet or not at this point. For the 14-15 school year, as I mentioned, we are proposing to take back the Cortez program. Every district within the SELPA is not required, but certainly expected to participate in the support of the SELPA as we take back these programs. And so I've listed for you in this presentation the different programs that the different districts are either currently providing or anticipate to be providing in the 14-15 school year. So the different categories, and I won't spend a long time on this, but the orthopedically impaired, medically fragile, deaf and hard of hearing, visually impaired, sort of a wide stream of moderate severe programs for districts who can't necessarily take those classes back within their districts for a variety of reasons. Transition programs, ASRD programs, and then, of course, what we are proposing to be our SELPA provider program is the emotionally disturbed program. Previous to my arrival here, when LACO was running a program within the SELPA or for the SELPA, if there was an upgrade to a building or a need that that program had, they would bring it first to the program directors for approval, and then the program directors would make a recommendation to the superintendent's council, and they would be presented there for approval. Just two examples of the kinds of things that have happened since I've been here. The El Camino site, LACO requested that it be re-roofed. The groups declined that request because the building is such that it wasn't worth re-roofing. It will probably be torn down as kind of part of this transition piece. So no one wanted to put those extra dollars in re-roofing that building. Another request that came just this year from LACO was to run new technology lines into Cortez, but those lines would not necessarily be compatible with West Covina when we take it over next year, so that was also declined, thinking they could wait one additional year and we would run it for West Covina just one time rather than two. So just two examples of the kinds of things that would come up in front of the two groups for requests from LACO. So this year, the operations group, which I, again, am a part of, has been tasked with looking at facilities. Do we have within ourselves the facilities that we need to provide these programs? Cortez was kind of being used as the model program. While there are many different programs to be open, Cortez seemed to be sort of the biggest issue, and the idea was to use it as the model, and whatever was applied to Cortez would then also be applied to all other programs, whatever was decided. So the operations group has been looking at that now for over a year. We've already met again this year since I've returned. One of the things that they decided to do in the spring was to really get an idea of what was needed at Cortez. And so the group requested an architect to go out and give very specific information regarding that. And the superintendent's council agreed to pay for that. Originally, the architect was going to cover both Cortez and Bassett. Bassett's taking back Medically Fragile, but Bassett ultimately decided they did not need any program improvements, and so that wasn't done. The recommendations from the SELPA operations work group, after looking at the architect's report, and this group is, I'm the only program person on that group, it's mostly made up of business people and facilities people. They had decided to make the recommendation to maintain the building in its current status with no upgrades and sort of take the wait and see approach to see if there were any ADA complaints filed. They also discussed the startup cost, some sort of formula that could be applied to all programs to get those programs up and going that weren't necessarily entire modernization kinds of projects. So what the group at this point is about to recommend to the fiscal group, who will then send it on to superintendents, is an amount per square foot for an initial startup of a program, a case-by-case consideration of program-specific needs. Different programs have different needs, and I think everyone acknowledges that in the group. And they made sort of the recommendation that annual rent, because that had come up multiple times, does not apply to upgrades. No one is expected to take that annual rent that comes in and go improve a building with it. That is specifically for regular maintenance and the use of the space. I did just a quick example based on what was discussed for Cortez itself. There's 32,440 square feet. If we looked at a $15 per square foot, and sort of the range they were discussing was 15 to 25, so I went with the lower end, our total startup cost for taking over the Cortez program would be about $486,000. There were some case-by-case issues that they picked out of the architect's report. Just an example of that would be the technology cabling. They sort of acknowledged that we want our students to have technology and that the cabling and the wiring doesn't exist, and that's something they would be willing to consider paying on a case-by-case as a consideration for Cortez, where they might not another program because they might not need it as much as Cortez does. This particular group of students is very intelligent, and so we would want to give them all the kinds of things that our own students have. So just as an example of the kinds of things that program would look at.
The architect needs assessment was very detailed, and so what we've done is try to summarize it for you. What are the needs of that site to take back that program? And so there are three options. Option one, life safety and ADA compliance upgrades, ADA, American Disabilities Act upgrades that need to be done. And then modernization upgrades, which total $1.7 million. The option ones are 2.1, option two, $1.7 million. And then option three would be building efficiency upgrades, totaling $2.3 million. So in that report, it details the different items and the amounts that it would cost to get those there. I'm going to have the Director of Facilities, David Larkin, come up and kind of go through the three different options of the needs at that site.
How are you doing this evening? Basically, what option one consists of are the minimal amount of ADA requirements that would be associated with what we feel would be needed for bringing the site up to compliance and access for use at the facility. Basically, it would consist of new automatic fire alarm systems, intercom PA systems, minor technology upgrades, compliant health office, accessibility for doors and hardware, accessible classroom sinks and cabinetry, compliant student and staff restrooms, minor stage lift modifications, along with soft cost and various associated soft costs associated with consultants, abatements, and architects and engineers. Modernization option number two. Modernization option number two would be a more detailed modernization. It would consist of everything itemized in option one, along with some new water, gas, and electrical to the facilities, electrical upgrades, new upper and lower cabinetry, major alterations to the restrooms in lieu of just minor alterations, administration building reconfiguration, new flooring, interior painting, kitchen upgrades, and additional soft costs associated that would be attributed to option one as well. Option three, as you can see, is a more detailed, addition to options one and two, and it's more consistent with energy efficiency upgrades, which would be associated with re-roofing the entire facility, replacement of HVAC units, replacement of windows for the entire site, exterior painting, T-bar upgrades, energy efficient lighting, multi-purpose sound room, and the costs associated with such upgrades.
So I want to talk about, we've talked about our current use. Currently now, we're leasing the building to the County Office of Adlaco. And in return, they pay us roughly $250,000. But we've showed that to run that, it's $230,000 by the time we do the custodial, the utilities, the maintenance, and the insurance. Within this model, with the SELPA, is us as the provider, they use what's called an excess cost model, and it's based on per classroom. So the way that would work, and that's to cover, as Kim talked about, the ongoing maintenance at that school site. So if they were to use 10 classrooms, you're looking at $87,000 is what we would receive on that. Different from the lease where we receive $250,000, here's $87,000. And that $87,000 and the second bullet is paid for. If the more students you have in that program as a district, that's your percentage of that cost, that $87,000. But in order for this program to be cost neutral, that other $142,000 is going to have to be paid for and allocated on a special ed pupils district of residence model to cover the utilities, routine maintenance, and insurance cost. And that's something that we still need to work out. Typically, when a district takes back a program, they might have one or two classrooms. And so that model works great, the $8,700. You already have a custodian. You already have insurance on the building. And so it covers the utility cost. This is, we're talking about the entire school site. So we're going to need to look at that model to make sure that it's cost neutral, that we cover the cost. So in order for us to take the program back, what we would need to do to be in compliance is we as the district, West Covina Unified School District, would need to complete the life and safety and ADA compliance upgrades, possibly some of the modernization upgrades. So that would be a one-time cost to the district of $2.1 to $2.8 million. Then, as we talked about, the operational and program costs must be cost neutral. If we're paying for the custodians, the utilities, the maintenance, and the insurance. And then any additional modernization that would be done would be up to the SELPA to decide if they want to do that. That would be on the SELPA to make that decision. There are some other options. This is not the proposed option. Our proposed option is to take the program back. But there are other options if we don't go this direction. One is to lease the site. Currently, we don't have anybody necessarily looking to lease the site. Although it's available, it would mean somebody coming in, similar to what ROP does up at Del Norte. The district could reopen the site if there was a need and run it ourselves and use it for our own use. There would be costs associated with that. An option, which is not really the best option in my opinion, would be to leave it vacant. A vacant site has potential for vandalism. You still have some costs. You still have insurance. You have basic utilities and basic maintenance. So that's not, it's an option, but it's not the best option. And then the last one would be if you declare the property a surplus and the district sells the site. Those are the options that are available for us as we move forward. So we've talked about funding. We've talked about option one and some of option two, which would be approximately anywhere from $2.1 to $2.8 million. And last February, I came to you with a presentation talking about there was $6.5 million in the bond fund, and we proposed some facility needs that totaled $4.5 million. And I listed them there. Within that, the biggest ones were the West Covina High School bleachers, and we haven't moved forward on that. And then we did put in for Cortez upgrades of $1.1 million. The other items, the wireless internet, we're doing those. Security fencing, we're doing those. Shade shelters, we're doing those. HVAC upgrades, we started the process, but because those upgrades are going to need to go through DSA, it's going to take a little bit longer, so that'll be completed next summer. But that money is earmarked. The multipurpose room was at Cameron. Carpeting was in the library, I believe, was it Edgewood? West Covina High School. And some painting. Replacing a classroom. We were going to replace a classroom at Relinda, but we did not do that. Don't feel there's a need to do that. The gymnasium over there with the new wood floors and the interior and also the exterior. So even with that, even if we did everything that we proposed last February, it came to $4.5 million, we still would have had remaining funds, $2 million. So if you take those remaining funds of $2 million and the $1.1 million for Cortez, there is potentially $3.1 million that would be available to go towards Cortez for bringing it up to ADA compliance.
We've been having many, many, many conversations about this. Initially, with the SELPA, I've been really advocating for the SELPA to do option one, which is the ADA and safety requirements. And there's been a lot of pushback because the SELPA, some members of the SELPA, some members, some LEAs feel that it's not a selfless responsibility to take care of the facility issues in different school districts, and that in every school district there are programs that have facility needs, and it really is up to the to the district. And I don't believe that that in any way is going to end up that way. It's not going to end up that way. That's not what their recommendation is. So then I've been thinking in terms of, this is our building, we're the owners of the building, and if we're going to do, if we wanted to lease it out to somebody else, we would need to do these upgrades to lease it out already. And if, I think there was two of them that, you know, we would need to do, if we were going to reopen it for our own district, we would need to do these upgrades. Currently, I don't believe we have the enrollment to open up another school site, because it's not just the facility costs, you would also have the cost of opening up the school and hiring the people that would go into the school. I do believe as a SELPA that we have an obligation as part of the SELPA to provide some equal services to the other districts. And so for us, Cortez was really, seemed to be the most reasonable service for us to provide to the other districts. So I've been going back and forth, and I feel that because it is, I'm not comfortable with waiting and seeing if we get any kind of complaint. That doesn't feel comfortable in terms of we're servicing kids. It's a site for special ed students, and to not take care of the ADA upgrades does not make sense to me. So my sense is, because we do have the money available in the bond, and the bond was for modernizing our schools, that we do the work, not all of the work, but the work that would be probably equivalent to the work that was done for Walnut Grove when it was opened. The benefit for us doing the work ourselves is, if we did have a need in the coming future to open up a school for ourselves, we would have the option of saying to the SELPA, but we no longer want to do this program because they've not contributed any funds to it. We wouldn't be obligated for any period of time. Or if there were a period of time that we just felt we wanted to lease it out or sell it, we would have that option with giving them a year and a day notice. So that's my thinking today. I needed to bring this to you. I want to say that the one commitment that superintendents have made for anybody who's a provider program, that the cost for running the program must be cost neutral, and that no district would be expected to absorb any costs. So for that $147,000, we would not even consider this unless it was cost neutral, but there has been a commitment from the superintendents that that would be the case for all programs. But I'm bringing this to you. I want to hear from you, your thoughts, and we're not asking you to vote tonight because it's a lot of information, and we want to hear from you, and then we would be bringing back a recommendation. There is a time urgency, because if it is a program we're taking back, we need to plan for it for this year. We need to let the SELPA know we're doing it. There's a lot of work that goes into starting up a program. We're confident that we have the talent and expertise to make it a quality program. I would not want to commit to anything unless I thought it was a quality program for students that we serve.
So with that, we're going to open up to questions, and keep in mind we have this wonderful panel of experts here, the architect, consultant on state funding, special ed director, facilities director, myself. Won't put myself in an expert category, as they are, but we're open to any questions that you might have.
Thank you very much, Dr. Coughlin. Okay, Mr. Cox.
Remind me on why we didn't do the ADA, why we either weren't required to, or why we didn't do the ADA improvements.
Quite honestly,
over the last 5 years,
I was not aware of them. When we talked about taking the program back, a superintendent on the committee made the comment that, you know, be careful when you take a program back because you may be required to do upgrades. And at that point, I said, whoa, but I do not know. The county has not requested it. Maybe our, do you want to answer that? Because it was a program we were running, were we required to upgrade it?
Want to come on up?
Thank you. Only so that it can, it's speaking into the microphone means it gets recorded so the public can hear it. Thank you.
I'm Betty Hansen, and also the architect, Al Ziemba, can answer this. There's two ways to answer it. Because you didn't really make any major changes to the building, it didn't trigger ADA compliance. However, you still have this so-called liability of making things accessible despite that. So it's kind of a two-way trigger. You didn't have to, but in a way you should, because that's what the law is and so on. But neither here nor there. I think once you do a program take-back like that, it behooves you to then really take it seriously and do the minor, major upgrades that are required by law but minor to the building structure. And I would certainly help you get state funding if there is a bond in the state, and that could be substantial once the kids get back in the building. We can go after some state funding. We can't right now because they're not your kids, they're the county's, but once you take them back, they're yours, and we can claim them at that site, and that will be a tremendous advantage for you because that will offset some of the costs that you would incur in doing option 1, 2, or 3, and then we get state reimbursement for that. Roll that over to other priority projects.
Okay. Is that it? Ms. Poulos.
This was just going to piggyback on that. I know we have 7 children there, students of ours, at West Covina Unified, but you said they're not our children. If we're if they're a provider program and they're coming from all the different districts, but we're the provider program, are they considered our students?
This is how it works. Right now, all of the students there belong to the Los Angeles County Office of Education. They're not your kids, they're not anybody's kids, but because they're claiming them. But once you take the program back, all of those kids are your kids. They stay on your roll. You get the state funding for them. And so that's why we can legally claim them for state funding for facility upgrades. And that's why we have to wait until the program take back happens before we can make that facility eligible for state funding for facility upgrades.
Okay. And I didn't realize that a Charter Oak student would be a West Covina Unified, could be considered our student. I thought we'd be providing service, but not our student.
You have inter-district transfers right now.
Yes.
Yeah. It's treated in a very similar manner.
But the test scores go back to the district.
No, they're ours. Wouldn't they be ours? They're LA County's now. Yeah, Laco's.
You have to stand at the mic.
With the Laco programs that go back to district?
No.
That
I'm talking about when it's a provider program.
Right. That's been an ongoing question, and my understanding was we got the answer to that, and it goes back to district, correct? Because there was another district very concerned about taking on a program and really impacting their test scores.
Right. So the students for building maintenance, that ADA would be counted for us, but that student's test scores go back to their district then.
Based on the information
this has been an ongoing question. Based on the information we have right now, yes, that we would collect ADA for them, but the test scores would go back to the district because right now we get district test scores for the students that are in county programs.
Right.
They collect ADA on the kids. We don't, but the test scores come back to the district.
Thank you for that clarification. If the building remained vacant and a charter school decided to utilize that facility because it was vacant, would we be responsible for the upgrades anyway?
Do you want to answer that?
Sure.
Yes, you would be responsible for the upgrades. It's your building. You're renting or leasing that building. So if there was ever a lawsuit or something, it would come back to you. They're the tenants.
Okay. So that's good to know. We couldn't leave it empty then. Like that was one of the suggestions because it could come back and cost us the same amount anyway.
If we were going to use it.
Or somebody uses it.
Well, somebody uses it.
Yeah, I'm sure that there. If someone
schools.
Saw that beautiful empty school, somebody would
that's
want to use
I mean,
it.
I think
so
that's the issue. Is I think we're obligated to do the upgrades regardless if we use it as a program take back. But how we use it once the upgrades are there would be up to us.
In scenario one, there really wasn't. It was just really ADA. It was compliance issues. There'd be no gas, plumbing, and electric, it looked like, for the most part. If we needed the technology upgrades, do we have to upgrade the electrical to accommodate the additional technology that will be used at those schools?
On item one, the electrical upgrades associated with the technology wouldn't be that significant.
Okay.
We've already done primary upgrades to the distribution, which is the main distribution to the site. The electrical upgrades associated with option two or option three were more enhancing the power distribution if we were to go to a new HVAC units and or secondary feeders, which would be providing sub panels at the buildings, which would be taking 40-year-old panels and putting in a brand new panels. They're functioning now, and it would be adequate for the needs of the district. However, it shouldn't be affected by that much.
And then there would be no gas and plumbing, but according to the report, there hasn't really been any work done to those since the 60s.
Correct.
How long are they going to? Could we maintain it without repairing those?
The length of time without having to repair them, it's an ongoing battle. No matter what site we go to, it happens continually. Ideally, it would be nice to provide new water and possibly sewer in some locations, although the sewer in that site's pretty good shape. But water tends to go away fairly quickly because of the galvanized piping. So that would be something that would be highly recommended that we utilize if we go back and occupy that, would be to add the water to the facility.
For compliance issues, if we're going to utilize the kitchen there, does it have to be upgraded?
The kitchen area I'm not sure how they want to utilize it. There really hasn't been much discussion or thought put into the kitchen aspect because it's a very old kitchen. And right now they weren't sure how they were going to be utilizing the food services, I don't believe, yet. They were kind of discussing those issues. There's a few different conversations going on about the kitchen, possibly making it into a program for a culinary program or something like that. But right now the district provides the food from the district office or from one of the other sites to that facility.
I just heard they were saying that ROP may use it as a culinary site. Has that been discussed?
That's just my personal dream.
I did talk with ROP today. I had a meeting with them and asked if they would be interested if we did take over this program to provide courses or classes that might be specific to our student population, and they were very interested in terms of looking into that for the future.
Okay. The on the provider programs now, it looked like we only offered the transition program, and when we talked, and it's a beautiful site, and I think everybody would want to go there, but it was going to be our students first, and we weren't sure even how many openings we were going to have if students were going to come. So can we really even call that a provider program if we may not have room?
Anytime you take a student from another district, it's a provider program. Yes, we could call it one, but it's a minimal. It's minimal unless we expanded our program and expanded rooms, and we could expand that. But the one thing that most districts are talking about is taking back their own transition programs. That seems to be a priority with many of the districts. So there might not be a tremendous need for that.
And then I know that some of these, such as Bassett, Covina and Azusa, have huge programs because deaf and hard of hearing, they're all low incidence, and they take many of our students that there really isn't another place for. I'm not as familiar with what's happening at the other districts. Are they providing? Do we know how many classrooms? And I noticed Baldwin Park isn't on here at all. Is there just 11? How many school districts are there?
There's 14, but believe three of them are charter schools. You're right about Baldwin Park. They have told us that they're considering taking their programs back and servicing their own kids and being their own SELPA. So they're kind of, we're not quite sure where they are in this process. An example might be because Covina Valley is servicing the deaf and hard of hearing for the entire SELPA, they don't feel that they have room or the ability to service their moderate to severe. So Charter Oak and Walnut have agreed to service. Walnut's on here. Walnut should be on here too.
And I did see Walnut.
Walnut Valley, yeah. So, and then many of the districts felt that they could not service their own ASRD, and so that would continue to be a SELPA program, but would be serviced at other the school districts that are here. So everybody's made a real concerted effort to take on something. Sometime, if they didn't feel that they could actually provide the oversight of the program, they said we would provide the buildings and the classes, but we want the SELPA to do the oversight. Charter Oak has said that they could take on ED program, but they didn't want to run it. Would we consider running it on their site, and that would not be something that we'd be interested in doing.
And then, what was I going to ask? How many? This isn't the question I was going to ask, but when we're looking at number of students, how many students are the other districts providing services for?
I have that information. I can follow up with it. I don't have it right here. I have a chart that would show that.
Okay. And then from our previous conversation, it's my understanding that they would like us to do that in kind, to take on a like number of students to show that we're all taking on students with special needs and doing our part in.
That was one of the questions when we started discussing taking back LACO programs, was the equity in that all districts would take part in servicing the students.
And so this would be the best way for us to, my understanding is this is really the best way for us to do this with the, we're so impacted at the rest of, you know, the rest of our classrooms.
We could not take on other programs without putting on additional classrooms. We do not have the classroom space. Because we're taking back so many of our own programs, too, we don't want to impact each school. So in my estimation, this would be the best way for us to participate the SELPA and provide our expertise. We're already doing the mental health services over at Cortez, so we've already been involved in the classrooms and with the students, and that's been very successful this year.
And if we run an attractive program that meets the needs of the population that Cortez serves, I don't know how many students we have at private schools right now in private placement, and I don't know if you know off the top of your head, but how many do you think, and you might be able to get back to me on this, that we could have return, and that what would that cost savings be if we were running a wonderful program?
Specifically for our district?
Just our district, because we are paying out of pocket to have those out of our general fund. If we brought those back, there would be a cost savings to the district that we could also look at making this more attractive to us.
Yes. We've actually done a pretty good job of bringing some students back over the last year and a half. We've worked really hard at that, so we've reduced our numbers already. I would say we have, and I am doing this off the top of my head, about 12 students that still remain in MPS placements, three of which are not likely to return to districts. But I do think that there's the potential of 6 to 8 students returning to district over time, given that this was a good program. And SELPA-wide, the number of students sitting in MPS that have the potential of coming back toward Cortez is between 50 and 70. So we have some of the lower numbers of all the districts with MPS students.
And that's students who are currently in NPS, but we also want to look towards the future. If we have a really quality program, it would support us not putting students in MPS. And the whole idea of this program, we talked about it today, that it's fluid. We would hope that the students who are in the program, that because the program is so quality, they would return back to their high schools, and it would be kind of a program where kids are coming in when they need the service, but the goal would be to get them back into their home
and
schools.
The support would be in our district.
Yes.
So if they needed support in a comprehensive high school.
Our kids, right, for our kids, yeah.
We would have the support right there. I don't know what the cost is per student. So if we had six to eight students over the years come back, what are we looking at for average, one child?
I would say on the low end, it's about 28,000, but certainly on the upper end of students who might come back, it could be as much as 45,000. We do have a couple of fairly expensive students, but I don't expect them to come back.
Right, and those are probably the ones that you didn't expect them all to come back.
Yeah.
And that's why we have NPSs, but if we can provide a quality program, they could be with their peers and get to know their community and their neighbors. So it would be great if we could bring it back. Just want to make sure I asked. It looks like I've asked all my questions, and I appreciate that. Thank you.
Thank you. Mr. Spence?
Yeah, first of all, I always get frustrated when I see these kind of reports because, you know, I know you're new to the special position, but we had a longtime special ed person, and this never came to us. We've had parents on special ed committees there. Nothing ever comes back to us about the ADA compliant, because I was actually stunned at the lack of ADA compliant stuff that at the site, and you would think that would have come forward to us at some point earlier, but I can't do anything about that. My question is, I have several questions, and some of it deals with the funding and the matching, and I guess, you know, what is the potential match if we did option one and we had the students back? What is the potential match we would actually get from the state of that 2-point?
Okay,
requested amount.
Well, first of all, it's a little bit more complicated than that, but we looked at what your maximum eligibility would be from the state.
Okay.
And we were looking at the state would pay 60% and we would do 40%. Now, I don't have my calculator out here, but it looked like the 60% would have been up to $1.2 million.
Okay.
And I think you had to do, was it 800,000 or something? I'm not good at math, but okay, unless I have my calculator
eventually
in front of me.
Then we would get that money back.
Yeah,
when there's
right.
money there to reimburse us.
Right, right. We would go ahead and file when we could, just sit in line, wait it out, and
until
get and you could move forward with the project with your own funds, and then the reimbursement, then you could use it for any of your
for
local discretionary capital.
So, yeah, we would be self-loaning us the money.
Yes.
And then we can use that for other stuff.
Yes,
there's
yes.
money in the school education
right.
system.
Okay. Yes, uh-huh.
Did we look at things like, maybe this is for the architect, things like utilizing Prop 39 money for the utilities aspect of it, you know, with the alternative energy or, you know, we talked about water, the irrigation with the Upper San Gabriel Valley, because we do have some stuff going on with them now.
Okay. That's why we created three different options here. One was to satisfy the ADA upgrades
yes.
need were necessary. The second one, if you notice, was to do water and sewers, et cetera. Yes, there is org money out there that you can qualify for changing those utilities from the street up to the building, but when it's within the building itself, that's your responsibility. So there is some funding. It's not a lot of funding for that, but there is some money that is available there.
Yeah, because I like to see, like, you know, on those options, like the potential, you know, Prop 39, there's supposed to be money that
right.
we can get to upgrade that for solar, et cetera.
Right. You could use some of that for that, given that the plan that you develop under Prop 39 would include that, and it's a whole different element in doing it. But, yeah, it's certainly available. However, you have all your schools to cover, too. So, you know, it's your discretion how you want to spend that money.
Right.
Where you want to spend it. Yeah.
Okay.
So my understanding is there's limited funds for a district. We could spend it all at one school or spend it throughout the district. That would
yes.
be the district decision.
Yes. And let me just make this real clear so you understand that Prop 39, you can do that district-wide, your discretion. Modernization money from the state, only Cortez. You
but
can't
yeah,
use it at any other site for that eligibility that I was talking about.
Yeah, I understand that. Okay. What is the number of students you think that will be serving completely there in your best case scenario, I guess?
Well,
and how many classrooms?
The request of the SELPA was for us to take back the entire PAU. Mm-hmm. And if you look at that as it stands today, it's Cortez, it's a class or two in Charter Oak, it's a class or two in, I believe it's Glendora, ARD program, which is kind of the transition piece for ED. So over time, give or take a couple of years, we'd like to bring those back within district as well. We do believe, and when I say we, I'm talking about program directors, do believe that there is the potential of growth. And so we have one district in particular who has 50 students in NPS who would really like to bring them back. And so I see the potential of it growing as being significant. However, like Debbie said, it would be my goal as a program director to bring students in, and as they are ready, to start to wean them off of the program and return them to their home districts. So I kind of see it being a bit of a revolving door, but I don't know that that population's ever going to go away. So 65 now, I think there's the potential of on that campus being realistically 80 or 90.
80 or 90, and using all 20 classrooms.
Yes, I see. I could see over time, assuming we didn't do other things with some of the other classrooms like ROP.
Okay. And the reason I ask that, you know, because there's two conflicting things. One, you say time is of the essence. Time is of the essence to do stuff. At the same time, like the discussions with ROP just started, you know, there was all kinds of things that we don't know. And what I hate to do is spend money, and then we decide we're going to use the campus differently or for something else after we've spent money. You know, I don't have a problem with some of the upgrades, obviously, are going to have to take place no matter what. I get that part. But, you know, as far as going full bore, you know, there's a school district, Chino Valley Unified, and they spent bond money to upgrade a school, and then they decided, oh, we're going to close it, you know, after they spent the bond money on it. And, you know, that's, you know, that's irresponsible or whatever word you want to, it's definitely not cool to do that. And I don't want to be caught because of the essence of time that we're going to, you know, say, okay, we're going to do this whole big thing, and then suddenly something shifts, oh, that didn't come through because we just started talking, you know, all that kind of stuff. And so I don't know, you say time of the essence, I mean, is it worth slowing down a year of the transition to taking back the program so we can figure that out? Or is it, when will we know what you think we should use that site for? Because that, I guess that's what I'm struggling with, you know.
I don't think we have to make a decision for the SELPA, whether we're going to do it for next year or they need to have another option. The concern for the SELPA is if we take back 80% of our programs and there's 20% left in county, the costs for that particular program are going to skyrocket. And we've had this conversation with other programs as well. So I don't think it would be cost effective to keep it there, number one. And number two, the directors are very unhappy with the quality of the program right now. And if it wasn't going to happen next year, they would not put kids into that program.
I mean, I guess the question is, again, you know, how fast can we figure out, okay, this is what we're committed to do in this site? Because I don't want to have something where a year from now, we decided we're going to, hey, you know what, we're not going to do special ed there. We're going to do it somewhere else, and we're going to, you know, open it up as a some other kind of school or something.
Well, I guess what I'm saying is I would like to make the commitment within this month, next meeting, that we are going to use it as a SELPA provider program and move in that direction with possibly bringing ROP in to run some classes. That would be my recommendation. If that's not the direction that the board wants us to go in, I feel like I need to tell the SELPA that so that they can make other options available for the students while we take time to decide what we want to do with the with the facilities.
How much money do we have in our developer fund, to Rob?
It's on here.
Our developer fund?
Oh.
It is?
I'm sorry.
It's fund 30? Is that fund 30?
No, you're talking fund 25.
400?
Yeah. Because that can be used for this too, right?
I wanted to say 400. Are we?
1,000? No, I think there's a couple million off the top of my head. I'm thinking I can find that out.
Because that can be used too, right?
It's because to reopen.
For growth.
I
think the other thing worth mentioning.
Pretend somehow it's for growth as it is.
It is. I mean, it is. It's new students.
When you approve the rate, you pretend it's for growth. So.
The other thing is the work that's going to be done is not going to happen overnight. We're looking at a 12, 18 month progress with DSA and planning. So, you know, moving forward, the architect could talk about this. Probably would be they wouldn't be breaking ground for a good year. I mean, by the time you get through all of the plans and DSA and
because I guess if you're I don't know if you're asking what you're asking for exactly from us, but obviously we've already approved spending some money at that upgrades, you know, as far as upgrades in concept.
We talked when we presented in February. We talked about $1.1 million in upgrades at Cortez.
I mean, are there any buildings there that just should just come down and we shouldn't repair or find another way to deal with it?
Visually, the school is in good condition, okay? When you drive by it, you take a look at it, it's good. Great. The school is over 50 years old.
Right, I know.
And there are improvements that need to be made to that school. There are things in there that are just, they're energy inefficient. You have little wall banger air conditioning units versus an economical HVAC system. You have windows that are made of different materials. You've got old materials in this building because they've never had any upgrades to them. But the upgrades to these buildings are not all that complicated because the structure itself is still in good condition. It's just a facade of what you're looking at. In other words, it's like an old car. If you have an old car and it's rusted on the outside, but once you fix the body up, and if it ran good, it's still going to run good.
Okay, so that's a no. They don't need to come down, right?
No, they do not.
Okay. I mean, because I'm inclined that obviously we have to do option one. You know, I think there may be money for some of the stuff in two when we talk about, you know, electricity and water and stuff like that from other outside sources, that if, you know, they're willing to do stuff, we should take a look at that.
That's why we put up between 2.1 and 2.8 to take some of the things from option two, but not all of them.
Right. And then, you know, but I really want to make sure that we're sure as a board and a staff that we know that, but that's what we're going to do with this building. So it's not, you know, so it's not something where we're, you know, coming back and changing what we're going to do there.
To answer your question, Fund 25, there's $3.3
million. Okay. So we can fund the whole thing out of there. Then.
In Fund 25, there's $3.3
million. Yeah. But there's opportunities there, you know, and I'm inclined if we can do it with the matching stuff, I would be inclined to do that and, you know, go further than even option one, depending on what outside money we can get that's available for it. You know, if that makes sense from there's one more. Do you have something?
I just wanted to share with you your concern about the program and it going on. SELPA directors are very committed to the Cortez program and wanting to see it grow. They were asked to come up with a plan B just in case West Covina decided it wasn't going to be our first choice. Mm-hmm. They could not get past the fact that they don't want Cortez to go away to even come up with a plan B. So just so you know, program directors are very, very committed to that program.
Well, and then there's one thing that was brought up early in the early 90s, and there was a property committee that was put together, and they voted against doing it because they thought we would need the site. But there's that one strip of land, you know, that Cortez, there's the one house on the corner,
right.
You know, and I always thought there's that strip of land that we don't use as a school site, you know, that single-family homes could easily go on, and ROP has a construction program where they actually build the homes, you know, and then, you know, for different cities, they've built them with different grants and stuff. And so, you know, when the real property committee came back, they said, oh, we might need that land. I don't know why, but they did come back with that. And they thought we could only get a few hundred thousand dollars for that land across there. But I think we could, not only could it be a learning experience for students, you know, because the construction program, kids could go by a home all the time and say, I helped build that house. But, you know, that it would make sense to just finish off that column, and if it's, you know, $500,000 that we could make or whatever, that seems to be something that I would like to see us look at is, you know, I don't want to, you know, put like a mansion there or put, you know, apartments there because it's not big enough for that. But if you just continue from that one corner house, you know, just down the street. Yeah, that house right there.
There's
who
five.
Probably owned
five
the land,
them,
probably
there.
At the very
five
beginning.
Of them.
There's five of them right there.
Five.
Yeah, like that. That's what I'm saying.
So just finish
I'm
the
talking
strip.
About that strip right there.
Yeah.
But they said it was too uneven, so they thought they couldn't get that much for it. But yeah, but there's five houses right there on the corner. Does uh-huh. everyone know what I'm talking about if you look
yeah.
at the map on the inside? That stretch of it across? That's not
I think it's three houses.
No, it's five.
No, it's five. There's five roof lines.
And it's a pool.
No, no, that's a garage. A garage.
Oh, okay, three.
I don't want to change necessarily the character of, you know,
four.
that strip, you know.
Four.
You understand
four
what
houses.
I mean? But I don't, or the density or anything like that. But, I mean, those houses are right there. You know, to finish that off, seems to me that would be another source that we could use for funds to deal with. you know, some of these upgrades, and then we can go and make it a quality program, because it's not used by any of our school students at all.
A driveway here.
There used to be a ball field there, but I don't know if they still use it as a ball field or not.
Yes.
There's four.
There's four.
We had an open house there, and there were kids.
This one faces the street.
Yeah, but,
no, I know this one. I know.
But, you know, some single family regular homes there. That ROP, you know, if you use ROP construction and dealt with the city, there's grants available for that kind of stuff. You know, I think there's a possibility, whatever the amount is, not only provide some housing, but to provide some capital funds for it.
That's what you're
providing. That doesn't come, so I'd like to see us look at that too if we're going to do this. So that's where I'm at.
Okay. Is that it?
I guess so.
For right now. Ms. Shoemaker.
This sort of encompasses the problem I've had since we decided to move from the county as the administrative unit. This I see as something that should have been looked at when you guys started discussing changing the administrative unit and taking programs back and things like that. I'm hearing that the self is not interested in helping pay for some of the costs of upgrading this facility to be a provider program, yet I remember sitting here talking about telephone lines that we were putting in at Galena Valley so they could be the administrative unit, and the additional $25,000 they needed from each district so that they could become the administrative unit, yet when we have a facility in desperate need of upgrading to service students, we're told, oh, nope, sorry, you guys need to do that. So I have a really big problem with that. I understand the superintendent's point about if we do it ourselves, then we can do what we want with the school. But ultimately, our discussion has been this is to be for our special education students. We are going to be a provider program. And that's what I would like to see it stay at. Between the options, I think there are some things that we absolutely need to do for ADA compliance. The problem I have is when I look at option one and option two, I see in option one that we are going to have accessible classroom sinks and compliant cabinetry. But then you look in option number two, and it says new upper and lower cabinetry. I do not want to see, if we're going to do this, I don't want to be doing things twice. So if we go forward with option one now and then go forward with option two, I don't want things that we've already upgraded be pulled out to put in new.
Yeah, and not to interrupt you, but that to explain that scenario, option one is a minimal amount that DSA would require for us to be compliant. That is, if we have a classroom facility with a sink and a cabinet, we could modify the existing cabinet to provide knee access. The drinking fountain and the faucet could be modified. However, in option two, you would take that a step further, and that would be to install some additional casework, uppers and lowers, new in lieu of just modifying the existing. So option one was basically, you know, what do we basically have to do to comply? Option two is let's take it to the next level. Let's add some upper cabinets, some lower cabinets that comply with ADA. And then option three is, you know, some more items associated with energy efficiency, HVAC, cosmetics. Does that make sense?
It makes perfect sense, but you're also talking to somebody who went to West Covina High and watched millions of dollars be poured into technology that was pulled out 4 years after she graduated because it wasn't done correctly the first time. And so that's where my concern comes from. When we're working on changing bathrooms, and then the option two is a major reconfiguration of that, trust me, I understand the difference between making something work and sort of getting it really complete. It's one of the advantages of being a construction defect paralegal. So that is why when I look at this, I don't like let's do the minimum and then have to expand it later on our wants, because ultimately we're going to have to do this. We're going to need, you know, new water, gas, pipes, sewer doesn't seem to be as much. So I would like to see a better combination of option one and two to get the actual cost, because on option three, those seem to be things that we can plan for in the future and change as we go along, whereas a lot of option one and two, I feel, need to be completed together.
That's why option one was 2.1 million, option two was 1.7, so put them together 3.8. So the slide said, you know, somewhere between 2.1 and 2.8 million, doing some items out of option two for that very reason.
Like Mr. Spence said, I would like to have a better idea of what programs are actually willing to come in. If ROP is an option, then we really need to do the part of option two that is upgrade the kitchen. So have Ms. Alexander's dream that.
And I guess what I want to say, we don't, at this current time, we have not, I just had a very informal conversation with ROP, and there's interest, but it wasn't, let's sit down and plan what we're going to do. I was explaining to them, I'm coming to the board tonight, I'd like to know if there's something that you'd like, an interest that you would like us to consider going forward on. So today was our first conversation.
I understand. And that will obviously influence what we decide, or at least I decide as a board member to vote for going forward, because if I know, okay, ROP isn't interested, then we can hold off on the kitchen upgrade. But in terms of making it a provider program, I'm for it. I mean, that's the direction you're looking for. So, yes, I agree with doing that. I want to see a harder push from SELPA to actually contribute to some of this. I mean, at a minimum, technology upgrades would have to be equal to what we did for them when Covina Valley became the administrative.
Well, and that is, when they talked about the technology, they have acknowledged that they would need to do that.
Yeah, but they've acknowledged. I
understand.
To actually see them agree.
I understand.
And so we have, again, a better idea of what it's going to cost us. But other than that, I really have no problem with it.
Okay, thank you. What I didn't see here, and I was just curious because it's a 50-year-old building, is asbestos.
Oh.
When we start building, moving, I don't see it as a line item. Are we considering that? Because that can just be a Pandora's box.
There's asbestos in the facility. It's,
okay.
It's outlined in the binder that was provided. It's probably not outlined in here in the pointer for tonight. We do have encapsulated asbestos 9x9 flooring tiles. We've placed carpet over them in lieu of continuing to wax them and worry about having problems with them, so we did encapsulate them. We do have some areas of asbestos in the window putty, old window putty, friable window putty in some of the windows. So the windows are in need of some significant work. It's fine now as long as it's not disturbed. However, it's something that should be entertained at some point in time. And I believe option two and option, once you get into option two, some of those
that?
Would have to trigger it, because if we were to go through option two and provide new carpeting and flooring throughout the campus, it would trigger the need to abate the 9x9 flooring floor tiles in there in order to place down the new carpeting. So there's a couple of things that would trigger it. Option three would trigger the window abatement. You know, if we were to upgrade the new glazing and maybe put dual pane glass in the windows, in the window front of the buildings,
okay,
that would trigger the abatement as well. For
and so those costs are
they're
built
more
in
the binder. Yeah, they're
yeah.
outlined in the binder as opposed to the
okay, that they're detailed tonight. In the binder, but they're included here in this overview we're looking at.
Correct.
Okay. I like the idea. And I was looking here at the picture. I like the idea of selling off part of it and having the ROP build it. They built a home right down the street from me, and they did a really, really good job, the ROP program. The only problem that we had is it then sat vacant for 2 years. And so then it was vandalized, and there was...
That's stupid. That's
yeah,
the city's
and that was the city, and that was the city in the fine. So we have to really make sure we're... But I like that idea. The kids came in. They were so respectful. They were cleanly. There was never a problem. And we... would go in, you know, like once a month and say, oh, let's see your new progress. So I really like that idea. Again, we'd have to look at what is the site going to be used for, and if we take away some of the green space, are we going to need that later, depending on what we're doing here? I understand. But, you know, if we want to put something up, a structure, so we have to consider those things as well. But it is a big piece of property. I do know that.
Yes, because then that would change traffic and and all of, we have to make sure, is the parking going to be adequate, because it'll be used to capacity, so we may have to look at.
That had to have been an old farmhouse.
Oh, the one here in the corner?
That had to be
the old farmhouse. And they hung on to it.
No, where?
In the corner, he's saying it had to be a farmhouse.
No, that corner was all of the school, I remember when I was a kid. And I remember when the houses went up, and that, all that property belonged to the.
It wasn't a farmhouse?
No, this wasn't a farmhouse.
Really?
No.
So the district sold?
It sold
that
corner. I remember, because my girlfriend lived right here, and I remember playing in that corner in the big tree. And when they sold it, that big tree went down. So there was a lot of memories in that tree. When they did the house on Willow, they didn't, all of a sudden they realized they didn't have enough electricity. And they needed to put a new transformer up. And the city had to pay for that transformer. If we sell property, are we responsible for the transformers?
So she's shaking her head, yes.
You have to pay for it.
Oh, no. We build it, but if we.
You have to do whatever any agency, utility agency requires, you'll have to do that because you are considered a developer. Yeah?
Because I know that was a surprise to the city.
Right.
To have that hit them because they were looking at possibly making money and they actually lost money.
They
on
lost
that
a lot of money.
Because of the transformer was a big part of it, I believe.
Now, if you sold the land just raw and sold it to a developer, then it's their
then
responsibility.
Their,
if they're, but if we had ORP do it, then we're responsible.
Then you're the developer at that point.
But you'd have to do that.
But then ORP would be absorbing that. Yeah.
No, yeah.
Okay.
I just know that. That ROP, I mean, it was excellent, but I know when that hit the city, I don't want to say they were devastated, but it was a shock.
But
and
it was
I would like.
Project.
Yes.
So how did they be shocked if it was the city's
They
project?
Didn't know they were going to need another transformer. When they tried to hook it up, they realized that.
They need a new planning department then.
That there wasn't enough power because there were so many houses that utilized so much more energy than they did in the 50s when that track was built. And I think that was even built way before the 50s.
Mm-hmm.
I think some of them might have been in there in the 30s. So your house is even older than that.
Oh yeah.
So, I mean, that was just something. I just wanted
right.
to throw that out there if that was something right. we were thinking of doing to look into that before we did that.
Okay. I don't have any other questions.
Can I?
Yes, Ms. Shoemaker.
It was mentioned that to avoid us being the developer and having the same situation that the city had as the developer with the transformer to just sell the property to a developer, I think we also need to look at then what restrictions we can put on them in terms of building, because I don't believe they would be under any obligation to use ROP, and they can apply to the city to get whatever variance they want, and they can put, 135 houses like they're doing right now in one area that's 7 acres.
Then we would need to open it for a new school.
Actually, when we had to sell that land, because we were involved in the renegotiation, I don't know if you're on the board, Steve, renegotiating when they had sold off land before I was on the board and we had to renegotiate it. We actually had stipulations in there about what the density was and what it was as part of the deal.
That's what I would like
to
hear.
I mean, so just, that was, that was a long time ago, because I'm not sure Steve was on the board when we did it. But but that stuff was all in the contract, because he came back and when we were redoing that. So.
Because there was major revisions to that law in 1990.
Yeah. Well, this would have been 92.
Ms. Kaplan, go ahead. You have
so let me see if I can summarize what I'm hearing and tell me if I'm hearing it.
Okay.
Correctly.
Well, hang on. Before you do that, I had one quick
okay.
question of you. Thank you.
Okay.
When Ms. Shoemaker brought up, which I had forgotten about, how we did have to contribute $25,000 per district, did that enter into your conversation when you spoke with them, or do you now have a new talking point?
When they talked about that committee to look at things that are specific to the site, one of the things they talked about was the technology infrastructure. So that's definitely part of looking at what the program would need for the program to run. They don't want to be responsible for facilities, but they do want to be, they are willing to be responsible for the things that go into upgrading the program. So that would be the conversation.
Okay. Good. Good talking point.
Okay, I'm sorry. Go ahead.
No, you want to get a sense of where
we're
at.
Let me tell you what I'm hearing.
what I'm hearing is there seems to be consensus that we should move forward with the take back, that we are responsible for minimally option one, but you would need more information in terms of what, I mean, when we really talk about what the upgrades would be, that's a whole more detailed conversation. But I'm getting a sense, and tell me if I'm wrong, that the consensus of the board is to move forward with the take back. Am I misinterpreting, or is that what I'm hearing?
I believe that's what we're all in agreement with.
Okay, so as we move forward and kind of have an opportunity to talk more with ROP and develop our program, we'll be coming back to get more information from you in terms of what the actual upgrades would look like and the amount of money we're going to spend, but we will move forward with the take back. Okay, thank you.
Yeah, but I think you heard at least that also that there are lots of exploration of options to see what else could go in there too, because I heard Mr. Maker himself at least talked about there's some things and options too that make sense for now too.
Right, but that's more in terms of what we're going to do, and depending on how we grow the program, we definitely won't make any decisions without coming back and talking to you as we have more information. But I needed to know, do we move forward with the take back? And I appreciate all of your input tonight.
Well, and when that comes back, I would like, with that part of the presentation mentioned annual rent, I would like to see some hard numbers on what the school is going to cost us to run with the programs, what each district, what we'll be getting for the SELPA for that, if we are going to get annual rent, what that would look like, so that they've said that the program is going to be cost neutral, but
they are currently working on the formula. I mean, everything is happening at the same time, so clearly I will be bringing, as new information is available, I will be bringing that back to you.
It sounded like we couldn't even start moving on this until next year. So if we took back the program, it would be next school year. So we would have students in that building that was not compliant, is what I'm understanding. They would be our students and they in a building that's not compliant.
Like now.
You have.
But now they're the county students. They're saying these would be our students.
Even
now.
If we started this spring, it would be 18 months. We already talked we'd have to move students into other classrooms while we're doing the classroom. So there's no way without closing the program we could do the work and then have the kids.
And so right, yeah, and so we would do it in phases too, and even though it's the county program right now, it's still our school,
right,
and we're still responsible. So, you know, we're moving in that direction of getting the ADA compliant issues addressed and worked on, but it would be at least 18 months, possibly 2 years, and it would be a phase-in project. Right now they're not using the entire school, so we would be able to use, work on part of the school and then transfer them over. Total completion, you're looking at 2 years, so it's very possible that sooner than later we could get them moved into the newer portions.
And I know we did that at the high school. We did wings, uh-huh, and the students moved around. How long would it be in the 18 months from today's? I mean, from when are we looking at that 18-month period for a
right
portion of them to be in something?
I'll have the architect come up and kind of talk about the process.
First thing, a lot of it's going to depend on what you select. If you select various items from option two, obviously it's going to add to the construction time. In looking at the project right now, it looks like it can be built in three phases, and that's moving students from one group of buildings to another group of buildings and so on. The process of putting the plans together would take you three to 4 months. It'll go to DSA. It'll sit there for 6 months, mm-hmm, okay? And then the construction time on a project like this could be 12 to 14, 15 months. And again, that's all dependent upon the scope that you select. The more work you select, the longer, obviously, the longer it's going to take.
Thank you.
So clearly we have a lot of work to do to get back.
Yes, a lot of work to do. Well, thank you, everyone, for coming. Thank you for answering all of our questions. We appreciate that. Thank you very much. Thank you, Mr. Larkin. Dr. Coglin. Okay, I have... When I went in May, and I've been carrying these around,
CSBA's policy services, policies in review, the ones that they're supporting, so I brought everyone a copy, and I don't want to carry these anymore. One for Debbie and one for Jessica. Okay. And then also, under a board discussion also, I wanted to pass out just as a reminder, I do know that it's campaign season, and we're all supporting fabulous candidates and very, very busy. So I just wanted to remind everyone what our policy is as a board regarding campaigns. So I am giving everybody a copy.
There's a CSBA. Did we do that one too, Monica? There's a we haven't updated it. There's a recommendation from CSBA, so we gave you that as well because we haven't updated this policy since 1991.
This is from CSBA.
So we'll be working on that.
So we'll be working on this. But in the interim,
have any tie votes
in the interim, our policy stands. And I also just wanted to make the board aware that I am going to invite the candidates that are running for just a little quick orientation, give them a copy of our strategic plan, copy of our budget, introduce them to the superintendent, the assistant superintendents, and wish them well on their endeavors in running. So that way we are that's it for me for board discussion. Anybody else have any items for board discussion? If not, I will read. Do we have the sign-in, the sign-up?
I have it.
Okay, good. I just wanted to double-check and make sure I recorded properly. Thank you, everyone, for taking a look, and we'll see everyone at the open houses. We have Orangewood on the 19th, California on the 20th, Merced and Vine on the 21st, August Hollingcrest on the 22nd, Cameron and Monte Vista on the 26th. Our next Board of Education meeting is the 27th. And we have Coronado on the 28th and Walnut Grove on the 29th. Okay, thank you. There being no further agenda, this meeting is adjourned at 8:37 p.m.